In part three, Dr. Parnell tells us of the horrific death of her son and the healing that she has achieved with this technique. In addition, we will look at the current cutting edge of Dr. Parnell's work, which involves multidimensional integrative healing, healing beyond the personal, and healing from the trauma of past lives.
Welcome to Deep Transformation, Self, Society, Spirit. Life-enhancing, paradigm-rattling conversations with cutting-edge thinkers, contemplatives, and activists with Dr. Roger Walsh and John Dupuy. Join us in the evolutionary fast lane as we take a deep dive into transformational practice, peak experience, profound understanding, powerful contribution.
And then this new person showed up who was incredible. And this is Suzanne Siegel. I don't know if you remember or know Suzanne Siegel. Suzanne Siegel was a psychologist. She wrote a book called Collision with the Infinite. She had had an experience of a personal self completely dropping away at a bus stop in Paris. And then she spent time completely lost because every time she looked for herself, there was nothing there and she'd get freaked out. And all this fear would arise. So she met Jean Klein. He instructed her not to look within anymore and to just live. And so she then said what came was the springtime, was just this joyful living moment to moment. And so a group of us began to meet with her. I saw her, I think, every week individually. And then a group of us would meet with her, a group of therapists. And she made the experience of that, which always is a completely normal, regular experience. And some of what the sitting, so I would sit with her, I drop into the space of nowness, the resonance in what she lived in, and I could see the places of holding. I call them tinker toys in the vastness because I could see the constructs. It was like I could see them. And then in the seeing of them in her presence, they would dissolve. And then there would just be this. I had so many of experiences of this. And it was just normal. We were just girlfriends in the vastness, as she would say. We were all just friends playing in this that we always are. Ordinary experience of this. It's something, it's not special. It's just who we are. And she just normalized that. And I was so blessed to have so much time with her. And then she died of brain cancer. It was at the time of the Hale-Bopp comet coming through the sky. She passed away at that time. It was, we had her in our life for 6 months and then she was gone. It was devastating and also so profoundly grateful to have had her as a teacher. So these were the main teachers in my life. And the way, you know, the way of working is just, again, none of this stuff that shows up in clients is who they are. Essentially, it's just these obvious contractions or, you know, constructs that can be seen and known and dissolved. But the EMDR rapidly allows these things to move out. Again, anything that isn't true self just will evaporate, will just dissolve out. So I was kind of, you know, living a normal life. And then 4 years ago, a horrifically terrible thing happened. And I'll speak of it. And so my 41-year-old son was murdered in his San Francisco apartment and he was dismembered. And I had a sense that something was wrong. It was at Easter. I couldn't contact him. I won't go into details. I don't want to traumatize anybody hearing this. I ended up hiring a private investigator. We discovered who did it. They finally got access to his apartment. And then all of this started to unfold of what had happened. And then we ended up with homicide investigation, all kinds of, you know, really extreme stuff. But what I know is that I know, and I knew at the time, that everything was exactly as it should be. I have no argument with life. I went into the space of this intense vibrational field and this sense of being held by everything at the same time, that it was horrible. It was horrible and exactly essential okayness. It's hard to describe that. And along the way, and I can't even remember the chronology, I knew that I needed to get help for him. I needed to get help for him, and I needed to get help for me and my family, because you don't want to die in this way. It was a friend of his who went crazy on meth and did this to him. And the police had already killed him. The guy who killed my son was already killed by the police, but they hadn't connected the two crimes together. Myself and my family and my friends, we made that connection for the police. There was so much incompetence, it's crazy. But so the perpetrator was dead. There was no longer any, they had to really confirm that. But I knew this isn't a good thing. However, my son was visiting people. He was showing up in dreams. He was showing up in visions. His former girlfriend is channeling him. She'd never done this ever before. He's communicating, saying, "Mom, it's great. You're right. I'll see you again. It's not your time yet." But he was like ecstatically happy about where he was. And people were reporting he was visiting. But I was having dreams of having to assemble pieces, that there was a, like puzzle pieces were scattered, and I needed to get them together. And I knew that it's not a good thing to die in that way. It's just not. The Tibetans, all the different, you know, traditional practice, this is not a good way to go. So I put out the word to my community that I needed a shaman, I needed a spirit helper, I needed somebody for him, for me, for my family. And I found somebody. This is the synchronicity that was like, I felt like, as horrible as this was, there was all this grace happening. Our homicide detective was an African-American lesbian Buddhist. Really? The woman who cleaned his apartment was a former social worker, African-American woman filled with love, who purified the space. Oh my God, it was like, who gave me a big hug when she delivered his things to me. I mean, it was like, all these amazing, beautiful things were happening at the same time. So anyway, I found the spirit worker. Her name is Jean Schneider, and she was amazing. What happened was so dark. A lot of spirit workers, shaman people don't want to get close to it. It's too bad, too awful. She specializes in that kind of stuff. So she did this work. She did work at night. She did all this work for him. And what she told me completely confirmed what I was feeling. And I don't understand this. So I don't come with a cosmology like this. This is like, okay, this is making sense, but I don't know how, because I don't have a cosmology like this. But she said he had 5 different soul parts. One of them never had incarnated, and that's why he couldn't make good choices in his life to protect himself. One had crossed over and was really happy. Another was visiting friends and family. Another one was still in the apartment, and another one was attached to the man who killed him, trying to help him still. So over time, she worked to help all of these different parts cross over together. It was integrated, and she helped clear some of the darkness that had contributed to why all this happened. In the meantime, my dreams changed into I'm no longer having these dreams of frantically trying to get something put together. And other people stopped having dreams of him visiting. It felt like she'd accomplished that. So then it really came back to me. He was in a good place. I needed to heal from my experience. I did EMDR on myself to process through the trauma of this with bilateral stimulation. So, and I kept hearing him in my head saying, don't focus on it. Don't focus on it. Meaning what happened to him. Don't focus on it. So I kept hitting delete. This is where mindfulness practice is so very helpful. Delete, 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 because that's not where he was. He was no longer there. This terrible thing happened, was no longer happening. Don't focus on it. And I had asked the woman who cleaned the apartment where all this happened for a photograph of the clean apartment, which she sent me. So now I had a new picture to replace the old one. It's clean. None of that's happening anymore. And I process it through. So I never had nightmares or flashbacks about what happened to him, because I think of the EMDR part that I had done for myself. So what happened was I had been working with Jean for the past 4 years, almost 4 years. In first my own healing, and then in learning how to work with multiple dimensions of reality. So what I've learned about, it's kind of like what happened is, I didn't even realize this, is that I think I had a limited view of time. My sense of time has expanded into multiple dimensions, and my sense of reality has also, and I suspect, I never did psychedelics until more recently with an experience in the Amazon, but it's never been something I was attracted to. But I feel like in a way it's opened that multidimensionality. And so I recognize that sometimes what will happen is energies will attach to us that don't belong to us, or carrying something from our generations. I began to carry stuff from and recognize that I was holding traumas from people who are not my people, like others who have lost children. I was carrying some of that I needed to release. So I've just learned so much about working with spirit attachments, with ancestral trauma, with intergenerational trauma, with what I call energetic sovereignty. And so part of what happens with our work with clients, and this is the limited view that therapists bring, is that everything that they're experiencing, we attribute to things that have happened to them in their life. This happened from your childhood. You're carrying this or that, right? Well, there are times when what the person is carrying does not belong to them. It could be something they're carrying from their grandparents, their great-grandparents, something in their lineage. It could be something that they were around somebody and something from that person entered in and is attached to them energetically. It could be something, and I hate to call it spirit possession or entity possession, but it's a kind of energetic attachment. And if the therapist is looking always for what belongs to the person and doesn't recognize there are other things that are possible here and doesn't do really good inquiry, then they're going to be attributing all of these kinds of things to something that happened to the individual. And so this is where this broader view of what's possible to be happening is really important. I can give you an example of how what happened to me more recently, and some people are just more sensitive to this. After October 7th, with the Hamas terrorist attack in Israel, I had a horrible experience. I felt so traumatized, and I felt like I was in Israel. Now, what happened is horrific for sure, but my reaction to it felt personal, and it felt overwhelming, and I couldn't function, and I was dissociating all over the place. And I was like, I can't even be in my body. I don't know what this is about. So in exploring it with Jing, I found out that I had dead people connected into my system. Really old dead people. I had one was from like biblical times, and one was more recent. And we needed to do work to help release these beings because they had attached to me for some reason. We did the work, they released, they were able to cross over, and all my symptoms went away. And thought, okay, I've had multiple experiences of this, and now I'm able to recognize this in terms of inquiry with clients, like, okay, does this feel like it's yours, or does it feel like it's not yours? You know, just basic inquiry rather than interpreting. Some of my concern about some of the ego state work or IFS is the assumption that everything somebody's experiencing is part of them. And then the work is to integrate it. Oh, no, you don't want to integrate something that isn't yours. And in some cases, what we do is we make whatever is attached kind of the client and inquire what they need. Why are they hanging around? What are they looking for? And help them. So this is some of the cutting edge stuff that I'm involved with right now, is really this kind of broader perspective of what might be going on and helping people in bigger ways.
Well, thank you very much. That's extremely emotionally powerful, and almost hesitate to get into the concepts around it, because the emotional power of what you're describing and have experienced and are transmitting is so, so very potent. And just a deep bow to you, to the fact you were able to open to that, be with it, and hold the vast perspective of hesitate to call it okayness, but you did in the face of such an horrific challenge.
I think part of what, so in this evolution of understanding, so shamanic work, my experience of it in the past from a friend who did some of that, it was all about her doing the journeying for me. And it felt like a power differential. She'd come back with information that she conveyed to me, and I didn't know if it fit or didn't fit. Some of it was nonsense, really. This way of working is all about empowering the individual and asking them and helping them develop what they need. And the use of these resources is so part of it. It's like, so the resourcing that we do in EMDR, we also can develop our spiritual resources that are there for us. They can be ancestral resources. They can be spiritual resources. It's so part of the Tibetan technology, right? Is cultivating and developing these very powerful deities that are within us, but they're also without, they're also, I suspect, on other dimensions. So it's recognizing that these things are there and they can be used to help us. And everybody has different ones that they resonate with. And so it's really using that information, and it's kind of coming back to my Tibetan, to the Tibetan technologies and the deities that are within and without, but also recognizing, and I think this was my confusion about all of this, is that everything has that same consciousness. There's no separation from it. So that consciousness that illumines everything on all dimensions. It's seamless. It's part of everything. So I think I didn't understand that before. And I'm coming back to, oh, within Buddhism, there's skillful means. We use skillful means for cultivating certain types of consciousness, for helping and healing, for different things. So really what I'm developing are skillful means. It's not how to become enlightened, right? It's more how do we support a person who has something that's blocking them from living fully, and what might those things be, and how can we, using skillful means, help them with that? So it's more, and everything is part of the same consciousness. So that's where it's not in conflict with non-dual spirituality at all. It's part and parcel of all of that.
Yeah. Again, so much in what you said, and just to touch on a few of them. One, you've mentioned a couple of times. Well, you know, assuming it's part of the client is as most therapists would do, can be perhaps a trap. And it, of course, from one perspective, it's like, well, what's the client? If the client is this little psyche, then that's one thing. If who we really are is the universal mind, then well, maybe it is. But it's a big difference. Another thing you said, well, you talked about, I really never thought of this, but it's you've given a whole new perspective. You know, I dove deeply into shamanism at one stage, even wrote a couple of books on it, but it never occurred to me. Now I've had another flash of blinding insight into the totally obvious, is that, oh, for some people it can be disempowering. And I think one of the valuable evolutions as shamanism has been introduced to the West, particularly by Michael Harner in the so-called core shamanism or neo-shamanism, is the shift towards everyone journeys. So that's a major shift. It's like now, thanks to Michael Harner and a number of other people, the shift has been that the recognition almost everyone has the potential for journeying and can access valuable insights and do it with remarkable rapidity. You know, it doesn't require sitting on a cushion for weeks or months or even years. It can often happen within a single drumming session, as can often happen within a single EMDR session. The other thing I just want to note in what you said is the development of skillful means. And you, in Buddhism, of course, there are two kinds of wisdom. There's prajna, which is insight into the fundamental nature of experience and existence. And the other is skillful means. finding out how to be, learning how to be an optimal teacher and contributor. And often they come, they're separate skills, let's say that. Just because you have deep insight, Prajna, doesn't mean you know how to teach. So you're talking about about developing this capacity seems very important. Yeah,
I wanted also just to thank you for the depth of your sharing. I feel so honored that you were willing to go there with us and everyone here. And I've struggled with the darkness also. You call it depression or dark night of the soul. The literature on both sides fits. And I've also realized that a lot of the darkness of things I'm working with are not just mine. You know, it's collective. It's the whole family and what's going on. And I get open to that. And it's a blessing or a curse, but I just have to be present with it and go there. So anyway, thank you.
Well, part of what I'm learning, John, is energetic sovereignty. And it's so important because I think part of what happens when we're empathic and we're healer type people is we merge with others and we take on what is in them. This is the whole thing where we work with what we call the energy bubble. We have our energy bubble and the others have theirs. But what I discovered I was doing is I was merging my bubble with other people's bubbles. That was how I was using my intuition and my empathy. And it was causing me to burn out. So I don't need to run their energy through my nervous system. I can have my energetic sovereignty and theirs, and I can feel with them without the merging. And then we can help others without running it through our system. And this was such a powerful learning for me. And then really working with the intergenerational stuff, because I think part of what we can get caught in, this is also my view of time. It's just gotten much broader, this whole thing of time, is that in families, there can be periods of time of great trauma and difficulty. And we look at what Jewish people, what African Americans are bringing, what Native Americans are bringing in, all this intergenerational trauma, as well as European Americans. But what we have is a period of time of great trauma. But if you go back thousands of years, further back, you can always find resources and healthy, whole ancestral lineage. So if we go back further back and we discover where the healthy ancestry is, we really connect to that and then bring that forward energetically through our kind of our energetic cord, so to speak. We bring that forward. We can begin to heal the ancestry that's more current. So this is this whole idea of we can get lost in the soup of the trauma, that we can also find what's healthy and wholesome also in that ancestry, and then really connect with that and bring that forward. Even if we don't remember it, we can get a felt sense of that and we can find it and we can bring it forward. This has been revelatory. It's just been, for me, I think I carry the trauma of women being burned and murdered for their healing and their wisdom. And so this is where Christianity came into Europe. So my ancestry is Northern European, right? And Christianity murdered the people who were connected to the land and the spiritual dimensions. They were either you convert or you die. And so there is a deep fear. There was, I don't feel it so much anymore, deep fear of speaking out what my truth is about these things, that I'll be killed. But if I go back far enough to a sense of a time when there was this connection to the earth and to the spirit world and all of that, they still have in the Amazon, by the way, many indigenous places, they still have this. It has been unbroken. Find that, get a sense of that, connect to that, maybe use bilateral stimulation to strengthen it, and then imagine bringing that forward through the ancestry. It can begin to bring this healing sense and a sense of hope. Again, that's a broader sense of time than we carry, because we tend to get stuck in what we remember, what family members remember. So look for where the healthy, wholesome ancestry is, connect to that, and then bring that forward, either through imagination, get a felt sense of it, tap that through, really strengthen that. So this is the stuff that excites me, because we can focus either on the traumas, where if it's too much, you really can get bogged down in the it just feels like it's infinite. There's so much. Mm-hmm. Or we can look for where there's positive, wholesome, healthy resourcing and the ancestry, get a felt sense of where that exists. Even if you don't think or have pictures of it, you get a feeling for it. Focus on that, tap that in, and then bring that forward. So this is where it's the same with the EMDR. We can focus just on the traumas. Well, some people can't do that because it's just too much. We need to strengthen them and resource them before. And then maybe we can do the trauma work. We can also target with EMDR the traumas that are within the ancestry. When you think of what happened to your grandmother or your great-grandmother or your father or somebody, and you're holding in your mind and in your nervous system the trauma of that, you can target and reprocess that. And it clears it out. And then you feel free from that. So there's so much of it that we can work on. Past some people, we use what we call the bridging technique from a current present-day symptom. And it doesn't go to this lifetime. It goes to a past life. And then we just reprocess that as we would anything with the EMDR, and then their symptoms go away. But they've been carrying that in their system. And I don't know how this works. All I know is it does. You know. So again, I'm not interpreting. I'm not even saying this is really a past life. I don't even know. In fact, one of the video demonstrations I have is working with a man who, when we did this work, he connected to an image of a 4-year-old that he identified as himself right before he was killed in the Holocaust. He was about to be, I think, sent to the ovens or something. And I felt like I was with him during this process. And we processed through it. And there was this kind rabbi who looked him in the eyes, who gave him love. And then there were all these, he saw all the kindness around him. And then he imagined dying. Well, I felt like I was part of that whole thing. It was really uncanny. And in the end, he felt clear of this thing that had been, it was like a separation between him and life. He couldn't fully engage in life because he had this thing that he was carrying with him. And so he and I both felt like this was a past life that we had just reprocessed. Now, I'm wondering if this was his past life or if this was a being that had attached to him whose past life it was. Interesting, who we had processed that past life of this 4-year-old who had died that had attached to him, and then he was able to cross over as a result of that work. This is where I'm like, oh, some of what I thought was past life work for the individual I was working with turns out very likely it was for the being that had attached to the person who had been living in their body. This sounds really out there, I know. But when we did the work, it freed the being, they crossed over, and the symptoms went away for the person that I was working with. Even if I didn't know what I was doing, I just did my usual thing, and it worked. Oh, now my understanding of what I did is changing a bit. So anyway.
And the beauty of it and the power in part is that you're holding it all and don't know mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'm not making any interpretations. I'm just asking, what do you need? Who can help you? And, you know, what are the blocks? And how might we unstick this? And I always refer back to the individual. So I'm not interpreting any of it. I'm just really staying open. But I'm also staying open to the multiplicity of possibilities of what this could be. You know, so I'm not saying this is you and we got to integrate this. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful example of the way your own worldview has expanded as a result of your openness to the experiences in your clients. And I think it's one of the most dramatic experiences I've heard of therapists being transformed by the experience of the people they work with. An analogy that comes to mind is the original psychedelic therapists. It was part of a research project that interviewed them and some of those great pioneers, and a lot of them described changes of the kind of order you're describing. I mean, they started as, you know, Freudians or something like that, and they ended up as transpersonalists. You know? And some of them went kicking and screaming along the way, but they were open-minded enough to acknowledge, first, they were dealing with a mystery. Second, the psyche was, I'll call it psyche, the human nature, human psyche is far more profound and mysterious and bottomless than our little traditional psychology assumes. and that there is a wisdom in the psyche that, given trust and open awareness, the psyche turns out to be self-correcting, self-healing, self-actualizing, self-transcending, and self-liberating.
I love it. Beautifully said, Roger. Beautifully said. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And there's like a convergence. The psychedelic pioneers discovered this, and then it got lost. You're rediscovering it with your EMDR work. Hopefully, this coming generation of psychedelic therapists will rediscover it, as they probably are. And hopefully, it will filter into our mainstream psychology and open it to a much larger and transpersonal perspective.
And it's allowed you to have the medicine that you have, that you can be the power of the healer. It ain't easy, but it's coming through you. And you've just stayed with your process. And Jesus said, wherefore by their fruits you shall know them. It says a bad tree doesn't produce good fruits, etc. So it's like, yeah.
And, you know, and I want to say, and grief is still there, you know. Mm-hmm. Part of what had happened in my process was I could not lift the sadness. Sadness was with me all the time. And, you know, with everything I was doing, it wasn't lifting. So yeah. I thought, I want to go into a deep nature experience. So I journeyed to the Ecuadorian Amazon with an organization called Pachamama Alliance, spent some time with the Sapara people, and had a healing with a shaman. His name was Minari. And I had no idea this is what was going to happen at all. I thought I just wanted to connect with nature, that connect with interconnectedness of life, which I had felt before in the Peruvian Amazon. It's profound. It's like you're going to the source of everything with that. But he did this healing with me of using tobacco smoke and chanting and clearing, and he lifted it off of me. And he told me that my son was there with me. It was like, he was like my protector. He said that I was a healer. I mean, all of these things. He gave me the name Shamina, which is female shaman, but he lifted it off of me. And before I couldn't feel joy or happiness. I could live. I was living through it, but I couldn't feel that. And after that experience, I could again. So he didn't teach me how to do what he does, but he did this for me. So it's, again, it's like recognizing that there are other ways of healing that are old, that have been around for thousands of years. And that part of my work as a teacher healer is to learn as much as I can to be able to teach and to convey this to other people. So that was the other piece of my own healing journey, was that. And grief is still there. It's not all the time, but, you know, the anniversary of his death, it's very intense. His birthday is intense. His, you know, Christmas, there's certain places when it's like, it feels like it just happened again. And that's also a learning for me, because I've worked with so many people over the years who've lost people, but the loss of a child is a very different experience. Mm. It's just, it's really like a piece of you is gone. But I feel like I also dream of him, and I have such vivid dreams. It's like I'm seeing him, you know, like we're having ordinary conversations. It's never anything really special. It's just, we're just hanging out, and it's lovely. And it's, you know, not as frequent as it was earlier on, but I feel like he's not that far away, but he's on his own journey wherever he is. And he's in a good place. In fact, my granddaughter, after a surgery she had, spontaneously went and visited him on the other side. She just put her hands together, her feet together, and she just went through a tunnel. And suddenly she sees him and she's hugging him, and they're having a great time. It's like, oh my God. So, and she brought back, you know, she said, I'm not supposed to go very often. This isn't good. I can see him if I want to. There are other ancestors there. This was an 11-year-old.
Wow.
Who had this happen. So, whoa. So, okay. He's there. Yeah. I don't want to pull him back, but he's in a good place, and he'll be there when it's my time. I just feel like he'll be there too.
Well, beautiful.
And grief is there too. This is the thing about Suzanne Siegel would say, and there's fears there too, and grief's there too. And it's like, It's a sense of consciousness is so vast that it includes everything. And that just because something's there doesn't mean that consciousness isn't there too. So there is this kind of reductive sense that if this is there, then this can't be there.
Yes.
And so I'm like, okay, this is, you know, and grief is there too.
Yeah. And as you would know from your own deep Tibetan Buddhist work, in some traditions, not all, but in some traditions, there's a recognition that, and I'll speak for Tibetan Buddhism, that of what's called primordial purity, the recognition that at a fundamental level, everything is an expression of consciousness and nothing needs to be condemned. Discernment, yes. Discernment, there's a problem with the word judgment, which we use, because judgment has two different meanings. One is condemnation and the other is discernment. Condemnation leads to anger, attack, etc. Discernment leads to wisdom. And the discerning aspect of primordial purity is the recognition that it's all an expression of consciousness. Nothing need be condemned, but one can certainly discern something should be cultivated, some should be let go.
And also then you bring curiosities like, oh, I wonder what that is. Right. I wonder what that is. So instead of like, I shouldn't be feeling this because that means I'm a bad Buddhist or I'm a bad whatever. It's like, oh, I wonder why this is arising right now. And then it can bring this kind of inquiry and then go, okay, where's that coming from? Is this mine? Is it not mine? You know, is this something that needs to be worked with or not? So it's just like that kind of non-judgmental open curiosity that allows for things to be explored. But it's not like, I have to do this to be a better person. That whole, yes. You know, becoming a better person project is just, you know, if I want to feel anger and then you just know if I feel anger and hatred and any of this, it's like, that feels like poison in my own nervous system. Why would I want to be carrying that around? It's not just bad for others. It's like I'm carrying toxins. How do I relieve this so that, you know, and then EMDR is a great way to begin to be able to, you know, allow that to come to awareness and then see where it comes from and to allow it to be cleared out, to be cleansed.
And one thing I want to just touch back into, because you've mentioned it a couple of times and you've opened this conversation has opened my understanding of cross-generational transmission. We hear a lot about transmission of trauma. But you also point out, you've implied, and you write about it specifically, there can be a cross-generational transmission of limiting beliefs. And what you pointed to in our conversation is there can be a cross-generational transmission of positive qualities and virtues. And that doesn't get emphasized so much. So thank you.
Yeah.
This is what's really exciting to me. I think this was a big shift in, we're so trauma-focused and we're not resource-focused enough. And, you know, some of my thinking was, why, how would I put it? For African Americans, for example, why haven't some families not talked about what happened in the family? Why has there been an avoidance of some of this? Same with the Indigenous peoples. And I realized, oh, it's because it's too much trauma. It's overwhelming trauma. Who wants to hear about all the horrible things that were done? It's overwhelming. And so I go, oh, because I was listening to the book, Warmth of Other Suns. I think that's the title of it. It's about the great migration of African Americans to the North and to the West. And it was, oh, I got overwhelmed. There was so much horror that I couldn't read it anymore. And I realized this is what's happening. When you have so much trauma in your ancestry, you can't deal with it. And then it begins to define you. I'm living with this. It's living in my nervous system. Okay. But if you go back far enough, let's go back 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, however, you know, go back and look for what's healthy in the ancestry. Maybe we go back to Africa. Maybe we go back to, you know, wherever that is and look for it and connect to that and then bring that forward. I think this is a real key to what can help us. Same with Native Americans and or the First Nations people, the Native peoples of the Americas, where there's been so much horrific intergenerational trauma that's still ongoing. Let's find the way people were living and being pre-colonization. let's find that, connect to the traditions, the wisdom, their spirituality, take that in, soak that in, and then bring that forward. It's almost like the way I think of it is these energetic conduits, right? Think of them as energetic cords, energetic pathways. We have good and bad things. In my own ancestry, I have very strong women, very strong women, but they're not very nice women. they're like tough as nails, but mean, like cruel, mean, not nice, but strong. So I didn't want to let that through, but you can make a choice. This is what's so cool. You can say, okay, I want to invite in through these energetic pathways, the strong, the powerful. Let me let that through. And the stuff that isn't helpful or wholesome or good for me, I can imagine that getting composted. Let that go into the earth and get composted rather than coming through into me. Same with anything. We can take in the wisdom, the power, the good stuff, and we can say, okay, this stops here with me. We can compost this, or we can, however the person wants to imagine, we can take this into the light, or we can bring in a resource figure who can transmute it.
Yeah, that's exactly.
People will imagine different things, right? So it can go into the earth and compost and disintegrate and be gone, feeding the plants. But I want to take in the power and the strength of these women that were amazing, coming through in covered wagons where her husband died along the trail and she kept going with five kids and settled in the Texas panhandle. This is my great grandmother. She was incredible. Mean as can be, you know, probably traumatized all her kids, but she was so strong. So this is the stuff I can let in without the bad, you know, the stuff that I don't want. So that was like, oh, I can discern. I can make a choice. That's really cool, right?
Whoa.
So Laurel, you're getting a taste as to what I've been interested in more recently. Yeah.
This is wonderful. And thank you. And it's beautiful to see that you have created a therapy or co-created therapy, which is not only perhaps uniquely helpful with trauma, but you have learned both your own experience and learning with your clients how to use it to strengthen positive qualities as well, and how to draw on resources, multiple resources, inner and ancestral, and from who knows where. And I love that you're doing all within the context of Don't Know Mind.
Yeah.
We're probably coming towards the end of our time, but is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think what's important is also service and the intention for what we do. This is where I've had trouble with some of the shamans and shamanic practices, where there haven't been good boundaries, there hasn't been good ethics, it hasn't been in the service of healing for the sake of all beings kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It can be the taking of personal power, the ego inflation that can happen with some of that. So it's really that setting the intention that this is for the sake of all beings, it's for healing, it's for liberation, and then having proper ethics and boundaries. Because part of what happens when you get into the multidimensional area, people lose their sense of ethics and boundaries. And there's all kinds of boundary violations and people getting hurt. So it's like coming back to our professional ethics, to good boundaries, good practices. It's the psychedelics has turned into the Wild West. People are getting hurt as well as helped. So it's like coming back, you know, grounding ourselves, using our ethics, having good boundaries. And then really it's the purpose is for service. I just think this is just so very important in what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, beautifully said. And going back to your Tibetan tradition and mine too, of the idea that everything rests on the tip of the needle of intention.
Yeah.
That intention is so crucial, and the refinement, the purification of one's intention, the examination, reflection, etc., is just such a crucial practice for us all. It's just been such a delight to have this kind of conversation. And thank you for opening so deeply, both personally and about your work and the pioneering aspects you're discovering. This has truly been a gift for John and me and for our listeners. So thanks so much.
And it brings to me like the Lakota prayer, which is something like, Great Spirit, have pity or mercy on me that my people may live. Like all of this stuff and this healing we're doing, it's not just for us, that my people may live. And that grounds it. That's the key.
Yeah. It's this broader perspective that's going to take us into the future, into the generations that come, and holding all of this with great love and compassion. And I just want to thank the two of you for letting me share what's been unfolding in my life in ways that I haven't shared in this way before. This is continuing to unfold, which is, let this be a benefit to others. That would be wonderful.
I don't think there's any question it will be a benefit to others. And sounds like we should get you back in a couple of years and find what the new edge is. May you and we all continue to unfold. And thank you so much for
thank you so much, Laura. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being a part of this conversation. We hope that you were moved as we are moved being part of it ourselves. We'd also like to say that this is being funded by Roger and myself. It comes out of our pockets. So if you would like to help us to mainly to get this podcast out to more people, because the bigger audience have, which is steadily growing, but the more people we can reach and the more marketing we can do, the more positive effect we can have on the world. So we've done a couple of ways, but we'd like you to buy us a cup of coffee. Very simple. And I do that with podcasts that I support, and I find it's very satisfying. So thank you for your help. Thank you for your presence, and thank you for all you are and all you do. We love you.